and I'm an addict. You can call me Noodles, you can call me John, you can call me Dude. I got a new nickname tonight, I loved it. Tough act to follow, like 40 people have said, good luck. I mean, everybody, you did amazing, I'm so proud of you, I love you so much, that was perfect. Tough act to follow. Only way I'm going to beat that. No cheap tricks. But I am grateful for this fellowship because of everything that you just heard. Without all of you, we would not have that. We would not be where we are. I would not be where I am. And I'm so blessed to be asked to come up here and tell my story, tell our story. I'm just beside myself. There are people in this room who've got a lot more sobriety time than I do and have learned a lot from. And that is amazing. And there's also people here who have less, and I've learned a lot from you too. So I want to thank every one of you. Every one of you. Newcomers are the most important people in this room. So it is the 12 steps that got me sober and is keeping me alive. And I give the credit to God for having delivered me. And I got to Him through these 12 steps. And I attend multiple fellowships, but it is the Fellowship of Cocaine Anonymous that taught me how to do this. And a sponsor who walked me through the steps and taught me how to do this. And that is how I got better. That's how I got healthy. I tried all of the other things, changing apartments, cities, lovers, all that, and didn't realize that the problem wasn't who I was with, where I was with, or even which drug I was doing, because I tried all those changes. The problem was me. And not until I stepped up and owned that, and did something about me, the problem, me. The problem's name is John Noodles Dude. That's the problem. That is my problem. That's the only thing I got to worry about is that. And I take care of that. And this program and the amazing people that I've met through this, have helped me do that. So I want to, I want to thank everyone. Let me thank the committee and everybody who put this event on. What an amazing event. It is so beautiful to see this hall filled. Just talk to somebody downstairs. You guys are having fun up there. And yes, we are. Yes, we are. our story is disclosed in a general way, what they were like, what it was like, what it happened, and what it's like now. So that's what I want to talk about. And I'm not going to go too deep on the on young stuff. I was a kid. And looking back now, I've been an addict. I've got many reasons why I could have tried drugs, picked up whatever. No good actual reasons to do them. But I was curious, man. I was doing stuff from a young age. I was already stealing booze when I was 5. But it was kind of okay. It was kind of European upbringing. There's no slight to my family. Please know that they're beautiful people. But, having a glass of wine wasn't a big thing. What they didn't see was me circling back around and refilling that glass. And circling back around and refilling that glass. And it wasn't even like I was trying to do something. It was just like it made my tummy warm. And it just had these memories of everything being so fun. This is conviviality. When we're doing this, when everybody's sitting around having drinks, this is fun. We're having a good time. I didn't put two and two together back then. I was probably getting buzzed, But, one drink is good. Two's got to be better, right? I was cut that way from a very young age. And I tried a lot of dumb things, just to try to alter me and change me, smoking hemp rope. At age 7, just to see what that would do, because I heard it does stuff, snorting pixie sticks. Other kids didn't do that with their Halloween candy, God bless me, He made me this way, and here I am. But He delivered me. It's He who delivered me, too, so I guess I'm here for a reason. I hope I step up and fulfill that. I don't know what it is. I don't have any grandiose ideas that it's going to be something big. Maybe I'm supposed to pull out of Walmart's parking lot and make some other car that was speeding and would have hit a kid to slow down or something. That might be my whole reason. I don't know, but the Lord delivered me, and here I am. And so things started for me at a young age, and tried all the different things. was doing pretty much everything I'd get my hands on all through high school. And, I didn't have the consequences as much back then, and I kind of couldn't see them back then, okay? So this has like been 3 minutes of what it was like, and that's about what I got on that. Let's get to the recovery. So the first time I thought about wanting to get sober was somewhere around 15 or 16, listening to a band called Minor Threat. And this band is hardcore, kind of, skate thrash music from the 80s, man. And they sang songs about, getting sober and bottled violence and how different people act and how it's ruining the scene and all that. And I was like, wow, that's cerebral, man. I could get into that, but I was nowhere near ready to try to put that stuff down. I still use everybody I use, all those changes that they talk about, I went through, I had all the changes of friends and all the stuff and going to parties where there's a lot of stuff and made a lot of friends because I had stuff. I learned how to sell drugs pretty young and did that for a very long time. Well, at the end, obviously, it didn't work out. You get high on your own supply, and, there was a lot of stories that come in with that. I'm not going to run through all that, but, kept on using and moved around a few places, out doing things, seeing the world, started having problems in other places, and I couldn't really see it yet, I couldn't see it yet. There were just minor inconveniences, it wasn't the drugs and it wasn't me that were the problem. It was, the police. They were the problem. anybody who didn't think like I thought, they were the problem, so I'd kind of keep moving along to other people. That's where my mind was at, I remember one Easter, I was locked up in the Marion County Jail. It's Indianapolis, the county jail in Indianapolis, and trading my food for crack, because I wanted to celebrate Easter, so let's get high on crack. That made sense at the time. I can look back now and say, what? That's not what God had in mind for me. But that's what I did, And so I probably was meant to drink that juice box, but I traded it off, And it just goes to the thinking, back then. But I wasn't honestly trying to get sober. I knew I needed to stay away from the powders. I just do the other stuff, and those had problems too. And I couldn't see myself as alcoholic for a very long time. I did not discover that I was alcoholic until I had been sober in this fellowship, this time for about 5 years. Yeah, I attended a bunch of AA meetings and introduced myself as an addict and thought, boy, it would be cool if I was alcoholic. I'd feel more like I belong here, like I wanted to be. In my heart of hearts, I kind of didn't believe, that I was. And looking back, I was doing stuff that, normal drinkers don't, getting drunk and blowing up gas stations and eating raw chicken and stuff that normal people don't do, But I couldn't see it, At one point in my life, I was drinking a 750 before noon. Before lunch, I put down a 750 just to get myself right in the morning, That was just, don't get it wrong, because it wasn't about the booze. It was to get me in the right place to start smoking crack for that afternoon, which started at about noon, I was getting up to like 10, so that was pretty messed up. But I drank that way, Still never occurred to me that I was an alcoholic. And I was, in this fellowship about 5 years sober. And I'd been in and out for 3 or 4 years or something. I'd get some periods. I'd get a month, maybe as much as 3 months. But, never quite string it all, together like that. But this time, and I say this time, my sobriety date is October 4th of 2006. Thank you. All I have is today. All we got is today. And whoever's been awake the longest today has got the most sobriety in the room. And that, for me, is almost always Cowboy Russ, who sends out text messages with inspirational stuff about 1:15 every morning, every day. But I was sober this time for like 5 years and went out to breakfast, you know, after a meeting. And a dear friend, whose name is not important, we'll just call her Carmen. you know, I was talking to her about this and saying, you know, I don't think I'm alcoholic, but, you know, I'm scared to death to take a drink, you know. I tried it, you know, because I tried just, you know, we'll just do the drug, but not this full. Say, we'll do the cocaine, we'll do the heroin, the pills. Okay, we are that. Oh, we'll just do the psychedelics, blah, 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 blah. Just the pot and the booze, blah, blah, blah. You know, so, okay, just the booze. Well, that still didn't work, you know. So I tried all that. So I was scared to death to drink again because for those, like, 4 years I was in and out. I was trying all that stuff. I think that's kind of a natural progression for a lot of us, but I was trying that. And, you know, it didn't work. I was scared to death to drink because I knew where that was going to take me again. And I was talking after this meeting out at breakfast, and I'm like, I'm scared to death to do it. And just the words of wisdom, the words of God through my friend's mouth said, that's not normal. And it hit me like a brick, man, and it's not. It's not. Normal people aren't scared to death to go and have a drink. And I am. You know, and I am. And that goes for every other mind-altering substance, you know, that's out there. Because I know I can't pick up any of them. I know that they will do me. It will not be me doing them. And again, I am the problem. It's not those substances. But it took me 5 years into recovery to, you know, to get that. So I hadn't realized all that, but I did do a pretty good job working the steps this time. That's what got me sober. You know, I first heard about Cocaine Anonymous from a park bench, and that was back in Indianapolis. And I grew up here, but it was down there. I bounced a couple places around the country, you know, younger years. And I saw this bench that says Cocaine Anonymous. We're here and we're free. And I said, free? Get what you pay for. So I saw that park bench, you know, as I'm going to pick up some crack at 10 o'clock, midnight, you know, back 2 a.m., you know, 4 a.m. I keep going past and I keep seeing this thing. And so that was the first time I heard about Cocaine Anonymous. I didn't know anything about it, you know. And, you know, things got bad enough. I had a business, you know, providing stage hands to it. Amphitheater and doing concerts and stuff in Indianapolis, and basically smoked the business, pretty much locked myself in and just smoked the business, you know, and I was growing dope in the basement to kind of fuel that habit too, and just felt the noose tightening around my neck, and finally fled back to Milwaukee here. Because they don't have crack in Milwaukee, right? Well, that was my best plan at the time, you know, as I said, which I changed new cities, apartments, lovers. So I came back, you know, and, you know, pure willpower, I suppose, kept me sober for a month or something, you know, until, you know, one night I was out late and just kind of took that drive down, looking, you know, see who's standing on the corner, got that look, you know, and I found the stuff here too, you know, and it you know, and I was back off and running, but it was the first time I tried the treatment and stuff, and I went through a couple different, I kicked out of one, and she went to some others, and, you know, and I'm grateful for those people. I'm grateful because they delivered me to Cocaine Anonymous, you know, and they taught me some things and taught me some of the lingo and how to fix some of the messes that I really had no idea at that point how to pick myself up out of. So I'm grateful for them. But they delivered me to Cocaine Anonymous. My first meetings were at the Lawrence Center out in Waukesha, the Wednesday night meeting. Great meeting. It was like 60 people. And they were all having an amazing time, like everybody here tonight, hooping and hollering. And I'm like, what is wrong with you people, man? There are people trying to kill me. I owe a lot of money to the wrong people. You know? they were having such a good time. Like, you know, this, I think this is what I want, man. You know, if this is what it is, I'll take this. You know, this is good. This is good, you know, so... That was how I got introduced to Cocaine Anonymous and attended that and started attending some other meetings. That was my home group, you know, for a while. Amazing stuff. Met a lot of great people there. And started working the steps. I kind of had, you know, bounced around a little bit and like, you know, go to me, okay, I got to work the steps. All right, well, I'm going to work like 5 through 9 on the way home in my head. It's about 10-minute ride. You know, I can do that, right? That's how it works, you know. Just, I was still trying to do things my way. You know, I hadn't given over the control. I hadn't listened. You know, I heard some things, but I hadn't really brought them in yet. You know, I hadn't really accepted the stuff. So I kept on kind of coming in and out, but I kept coming back. I kept coming back, and everybody here was so kind, you know, and I learned a lot. And I'd come back, you know, after relapse, and I always wanted to go right to step 9. But I thought, step 9, that's where you apologize. I didn't know what the word amends means, right? But step 9, that's where you apologize, right? And then everybody trusts you with the car keys, trusts you, you know, leaves the checkbooks laying out again. That's step 9. Right? Let's do that. That's the one I want to work. So I always want to jump right to step 9. And the people that most needed to hear and have a solid amends. And amends is not just, you know, saying you're sorry. Amends is actually fixing what's wrong. The people who meant most to me really had heard all of that. It's going to be different this time many times before. So they weren't ready for step 9. I had 8 steps I needed to work before that, including my beautiful wife, who you know, I owed a very large amends to. And the one she got probably wasn't all that, but I hope I'm making a living amends here now. So. Thank you. So, you know, began working the steps with a sponsor who has a sponsor who taught me the book and read it out of the book. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is our basic text, and that is what we work the steps out of. And please do. You know, if you're looking for sponsors, there's a lot of people in this room that would be happy to teach you. Any of the guys that would be happy to take you through the steps. Sponsorship is amazing, and being a sponsor is actually really good for the sponsor. It gets me back in my books, so please don't, you know, if somebody's looking for sponsorship, please don't be afraid to ask people, okay? Because it's like a math class, man. Somebody's got to, you know, teach you how this works. And it's right there in the book. I know the book looks thick, but the first 164 pages, that's the whole thing. You know, and after that, it's many, many stories of people to talk about, you know, their, you know, what they look like, because we always think, you know, like an alcoholic or an addict, you know, you picture somebody really kind of hitting bottom, but the doctors, lawyers, everybody, that's why there's all them stories in there, you know, so we see that there's a lot of different looks on this, you know, but how to work this is all in that first 164 pages, and chapter 5 is called How It Works, you know, it's right there, get the book. So I did. I started working them, and I went to first step meetings. It had been for those 4 years. I finally said, I need to start going to some of the other step meetings, you know. But I'm first step. I've got the allergy of the body, the obsession of the mind. You know, when I get started, I can't stop. You know, and when it's going, I can't put it down. I know this. I know it's me. I couldn't accept that at first. You know, I kept thinking, well, my real problem is just that I'm broke. Like, if I had a job that could pay, you know, I could control my crack. If I just had enough of it, you know, money would fix my problems. Now, that's the real problem, you know. And I couldn't accept that the problem was me. And I always thought, okay, yeah, I can, you know, admit that, you know, we're powerless. I'm like, well, I'm powerless right now. I mean, until I get, you know, a check, until I get some money. I mean, it's just a temporary condition. You know, I couldn't accept that it was always going to end bad, and it always did. You know, it always did. And it's funny because when we're, you know, when we're trying, you know, for the first time to get sober, we believe things that turn out to not be true. But in our heart of hearts, we believe them. You know, there was so many times that I am not doing that again. I am not tricking off that whole paycheck again. And I was surprised as anybody come into the weekend, you know, and I'm still in the same clothes and I haven't slept and all that money's gone, you know. I remember one time saying, I will break my fingers before I pick up another crack pipe. I will break my own fingers, a solemn vow that I will break my own fingers before I pick up a crack pipe. You know, fast forward maybe about 10 or 12 months, and I had burned the wrong people for some money. And they took my car to pay the debt, and they jumped up and down on me. And then they broke both my arms to make sure everybody knew that you don't with their money. And so what did I do? Yeah, did I go to the hospital? No. I went down into a basement and was trying to smoke crack. Two broken arms, couldn't hardly get this thing on the pipe to get it to my face, trying to figure out how to smoke crack. Because that pipe and that cocaine was the cause and the solution to all my problems. That was my higher power. And that didn't work. But that was me. And I kept trying to do that until I finally did end up at the hospital that night, you know. But that is not my sobriety date. Let me make that very clear. Because what happened there was a traumatic experience. It was not a spiritual experience. So I racked up my share of traumatic experiences. And I see the looks in a lot of people's eyes right now. Yeah, that wasn't my sobriety date. You know, spiritual experience, you know, is what gets me sober, what keeps me sober, you know, and that is when I finally got, you know, got it together. And so that first step, I had to accept it would always be bad. Second step, you know, I actually always believed that God could. I tried to not believe in God when I was like 18. I tried so hard to not believe in him. I ended up convincing myself that there is a God. And a God of my understanding, that's who I believe in. So second step wasn't that hard for me to believe that God could. The hard part for me was kind of back to first step, my ego, that I wanted to do this. I wanted to control this, and I didn't want to have to involve him. But finally, you know, step three, I had to learn to turn my care over to him, you know, and let things go. And that, you know, that works out for me in so many ways. You know, when I was, I ended up in a halfway house, you know, after doing my third inpatient treatment. You know, I was in a halfway house and trying to figure out where to go after that. And I had to work a third step right then. You know, it was time for me to do my third step. And I said, all right, well, I'll work it on this thing, because there was an apartment, sober apartment, that came open above the Waukesha Alamo Club. And you had to be sober, and like a bunch of people applied for it. I'm like, all right, I'm going to work my third step. God, if it is meant for me to get this place, then let me get it. And if not, then not. And you know what? I didn't get it. But it was okay. I wasn't like, man, those guys are going to relapse, so I had to give it to them. Yeah. I didn't go through any of that, you know. It took all that off of me. It was actually pretty amazing, you know. And then it turns out, like, you know, like a week later or something, I ended up getting an apartment right across from the club for, like, the same money. And it was new and remodeled and bigger and all kinds of yummy things that I couldn't have seen, you know, around the corner. God had a plan for me. And I lived there for a number of years. It was some of the greatest years of my life, early recovery. And I appreciate it, and I see, you know, the service work I got into back then, and the fellowship, which just, it was like its own high. It was amazing. The friendships that sprung up that are still there, you know, and the things we did. I went, you know, taking guys to meetings back then, and my car, there was an incident, and so my windshield, the back window, and all the windows on the passenger side had been shot out. So I was driving that in early recovery, taking guys to meetings, you know, in January in Wisconsin. It was a thing, but man, that hoopty was wow, man, it was kind of fun, you know. And we actually, that's my point, is we had a really good time going to meetings, and, you know, if we're willing to go in this, you know, God bless us, right? And so we did, you know. And so I had worked that third step and said, all right, got on to the fourth step, and took way too long on it, but did a very thorough job. Get some help, you know, with the steps. Have your sponsor. Talk to your sponsor. I spent way too long doing it. Did a very thorough job, but spent, you know, too long on it. And then, you know, got on finally to step five, and I'm like, oh, I got to tell somebody this. And I don't want to tell my sponsor. I like that guy. So I had a plan. I was going to go up to Green Bay, and I was going to find a priest. And I was just going to vomit, like, all this stuff out at him and then run away, you know, like, take this guy hostage or something, because I didn't know, you know, how this works. I just know I have to, you know, tell all this stuff to somebody in step five. And so, you know, I got some guidance from people in the meetings, and I did not end up doing that. Lucky for the priest. I did do that with my sponsor, and that was a much better situation. So that experience helped me turn a corner, and I share that with the fifth step, because working that step for me put a lot of crazy stuff in the past. Just sitting there and saying to another human being, you know, I robbed somebody at gunpoint for three vegetables, you know? And like, that makes sense, man. I wasn't even hungry. But to look back and say, that dude was crazy, man. That was me, but I was crazy. I was out of control, man. That doesn't make any sense. And I'm like, put it all in the past for me. I don't know if that makes sense, but that was my experience. So I did 6 and 7, got willing to have those, you know, those defects taken away, and I still have to do that all the time because it popped back up, but it's worth it, you know. And so I keep doing that. Finally, you know, did 8, made the list of people I'd harmed, and got to 9 finally. And I think we heard a little bit ago about one of the amends that I made. And I had a fair number of amends to make, and still there's some people I haven't ran back into, but I still owe some amends out there. You know, see what the God and karma have for me, you know, on that one. But kept going. And 10, you know, I keep having to work these steps. And it's not just in meetings. I got to work this stuff in life, you know. At work, just this week, I kind of got into it with my boss's boss. And, you know, the next morning I had to haul myself in there and say, you know, are we good? You know, we're both passionate about this, and I think we disagree on this, but are we good? You know, I'm sorry if I was heated, you know. I was like, yeah, we're good, you know. I do disagree, but I respect you. So, you know, we got to work it, and I learned how to do that from this fellowship, how to keep things clear, because what else am I going to do? Like, I'm going to stay away from that whole half of the building for the rest of my life? You know, what is that? That's not recovery. And so I had to learn how to do that, and I have to keep doing that, keep working these steps. You know, 11, you know, improving my conscious contact with God. I learned how to pray through this fellowship. And I learned how to pray sitting out in front of a crack house in a car, because I really wanted to go in, but I'd been in and out of these rooms for a couple of years and hadn't got more than, you know, a month or two. And I was like, all right, they said, say the serenity prayer. So I'm sitting there in the car, and like, I don't want to go in, but I really want to go in, right? So I said, I'll say the serenity prayer. So I said the serenity prayer. Still wanted to go in. I said it again. Said it again. Still wanted to go in. Said it again. Said it again. Finally got mad. And I looked up and said, God, what do I got to do? And just like that, man, it popped into my head, go home, Abel. And that was the first time I think I ever talked to God. It was like my head exploded, man. I realized I've been brought up, you know, Catholic and learned all these different prayers, and I still am. And nothing against Catholicism. I love it. I go most Sundays. But I had been reciting prayers I had memorized. I might as well have been saying the ABCs to my steering wheel, because I wasn't talking to God. I was saying something I'd memorized. Good for me. I was trained. I'd memorized this. I wasn't saying it to anybody. I finally had this communication with my higher power, and it floored me. And I did go home. I went home, and that worked. Yeah. So. We got to step 12, you know, carry this message to others, sponsoring other people, carrying this message, doing service work. It's so amazing, man. If you haven't, get involved. You do not have to have the most sobriety in the room to do service work, to run a meeting, to make coffee. There's so many different things that keep this fellowship vibrant. And please step up and do something. You can help here tonight with things, you know. You can help at the one-day event that's coming up in April. There's so many different things. There's so many positions at the meetings, at the area level. It meets once a month right here. There's so many things you can do, and that service work really keeps us sober, you know. It helps us, you know. I know we're helping other people by doing that, but believe me, it helps us. It sounds like a fortune cookie, but it works. So, and I have to keep myself spiritually fit. That is what keeps me going. If I'm not spiritually fit, then I start hoarding bullets and guns, and I'm usually telling I'm in a bad place on Facebook. It's true, you know. But if I'm, you know, if I'm having fear, I'm not having faith. And when I have faith, I don't have fear. So, thank you. God delivers me from that, and that is who has delivered me. I've got to keep that conscious contact with Him. I've seen Him work in so many ways in this program. So many. I'm not going to go through them, but I can't tell you how many different times. I remember coming back from work in Racine, heading to Milwaukee. It was just about home. I'm like, should I go to that, as Bill sees it, meeting? It's an AA meeting. It's out in Milwaukee. Should I have to get almost home and take a left? I go like another 30 minutes. I really wanted to go another 30 minutes out of my way to go to this meeting. And like 10 seconds later, my phone rings, and it's this newcomer. And he says, hey, I don't know if you remember me, but you gave me your phone number. I was thinking about going to this meeting called As Bill Sees It tonight. Do you want to go? Yeah. I recognize when God's working in my life, you know. Have many times. One time I got pretty messed up, you know, back when I was using it. Took a heroic dose of acid in Cleveland and left my shoes there, and I kind of came down and I was in Maryland. And so this guy needed help with his car, and I helped him out. And he's like, I don't have any money to pay you, but I sell shoes. I got this whole trunk full of shoes. By any chance do you need shoes? Yeah. Funny how that works. I just don't believe in those things being coincidences anymore. You know? Just before Christmas, I had a buddy that said, hey, man, I know you know a lot of people. He's been sober a long time. He's like, I know you know a lot of people who are still struggling and stuff. And he threw a couple bucks at me and said, you know, somebody around the holidays, you know, needs some help, you know, help them. And, you know, within like 2 days or something, I had three different people that had reached out. And was able to help them, and the money worked out. I kicked in some too, but it was, you know, it was about right, you know. And that's God in my life, man. That's God working for me through this fellowship. And if you don't have the formal conception of God that I have, the God of my understanding, that's okay, man. Read chapter 4. We agnostics. You don't. Your higher power doesn't have to be my higher power. This microphone is a higher power. You in the back can hear me because of this thing, right? Yes. Thank you, Cole. There are so many higher powers. We flip the switch. Turn the light on. Don't be afraid of that higher power business. You know what I'm saying? We do it all the time. Don't be afraid to do it. Don't be afraid to give it a try to turn things over to something that's stronger than you. Because I know I turned myself over to this fellowship, and it's worked for me. It got me back the girl. I got the family. I messed up plenty still. But I know now how to fix it. You know, it's better not to dig holes, but now I know how to fill them in. So I am grateful for y'all and for these rooms. You know, if it wasn't for y'all, I wouldn't be here. So I tell you what, I will keep coming back if y'all will. I love y'all.